Selection Sunday is over. We have 2 5 seeds from the WCC. We have an NIT team as well. Welcome all into the unofficial WCC Hoops podcast. There's a lot to get to. This is going to be an exciting week of basketball. The WCC does have 2 teams in the NCAA tournament, St. Mary's and Gonzaga. Both of them ended up being 5 seeds. Both of them are staying out west, and both of them have very interesting matchups in the first round. And we'll get into all that. We will have Theo Lawson from the Spokesman Review on to talk about the Zags matchup as well, and what it could look and what that might look like, what the Zags have learned over the last week since their loss to St. Mary's, and all of that good stuff. But we're going to take a look at take a step back and look at what we have in front of us, the 2 NCAA tournament teams that will be representing the West Coast Conference in March Madness. Gonzaga, 5 seed, they will be taking on the 12th seeded McNeese State from the Southland Conference. St. Mary's, the 5 seed, will be taking on Grand Canyon from the WAC. The 12 seeded Grand Canyon Lopes from the WAC. So these are 2 teams. Grand Canyon, most WCC fans are probably pretty familiar with. They have played a good number of WCC teams over the last couple of years. They saw Gonzaga in the NCAA tournament just a year ago. St. Mary's will be playing their game in Spokane. So they will be heading up to Gonzaga territory, but the Zags won't be there, or at least not the men. The men will be traveling to Salt Lake City to play McNeese State there, which is also, and there's a little bit of a, there's reports out there about how Gonzaga ended up a 5, because that in and of itself is a bit of a shock to many people, myself included, to most everyone. Most people had them slotted as a 6 or a 7 going into the tournament, and they ended up being called as a 5. And the report out there sounds like that the reason Gonzaga ended up a 5 in Salt Lake City was because BYU, BYU's selection into the tournament, they could not find them a 5 seeded slot that would prevent them from playing on a Sunday. And to accommodate BYU's no Sunday rule, they moved them to a 6 seed, and they were playing in Omaha this weekend. So a little bit of a kind of a funny note that it is actually because of BYU that the Zags ended up with a higher seed and get to play a little closer to home. So we know the Zags are going to travel well to Salt Lake City. It seems, at least like of the groups that I know that are heading to Spokane, St. Mary's will have a very solid group up there as well. And we'll get into the pods and everything else as we go along. And I'll start here with St. Mary's and them being the 5 seed against Grand Canyon. So they are the 5-12 there. They will be playing the winner of that game plays the winner of the 4 seed Alabama and the 13 seed College of Charleston, which both of these matchups, the 5-12 St. Mary's Grand Canyon and Alabama Charleston, both seem to be early upset favorites, early upset picks for a great number of people. And this Grand Canyon team is a good team. They went 29-4 during the course of the season. They were 17-3 in the WAC, regular season and tournament champions. They beat UT Arlington 89-74 in the title game to secure the auto bid. They were in KenPom, they are 53 adjusted offense of 63 adjusted defense of 51. And this is a team that gets to the free throw line a lot, which I will get into more detail as the week goes on and on and on about going into the kind of the finer details of Grand Canyon. But be assured, like, this team is not one to kind of scoff at or kind of overlook. St. Mary's has done well in 5 as a five seed the last couple of years. They were a five seed 2 years ago in Portland when they beat Indiana. They were a five seed last year when they beat VCU. They beat both of them pretty handily. Obviously, like with Indiana, that was Indiana's worst loss in their tournament history. And then the VCU game really was kind of like handled well by St. Mary's before they saw UConn in the second round. Just looking at this on the surface, I do think St. Mary's has there's a much better chance of them, I think, getting to the second weekend out of this pod, because Alabama is the four seed, is not UCLA of 2 years ago, and they obviously are not UConn of last year. This feels very doable for St. Mary's as you kind of like take a quick peek at what they're going to be looking at, what they could end up doing. This plays out really well. I think for Grand Canyon, this is a team that has a lot of offensive options. They like to play up tempo. They like to speed it up. And as we know, St. Mary's is going to try to slow it down, be very deliberate. They're one of the better rebounding teams in the country. But you cannot overlook what Grand Canyon has been able to do as well. One of the things that's obviously St. Mary's hangs its hat on is that defense. But Grand Canyon's has been really good too. Like they hold their opponents to 40.4%. Shooting from the field, and that's 20th in the nation. St. Mary's is just a little bit better than that. So it is going to be fascinating to kind of see that matchup early on and really kind of like see this kind of balance between these two squads. The St. Mary's squad, as a five seed, I thought even they were given a gift a little bit. I think most people had them slotted as a six seed still. And the fact that they were able to slide up to a five, I think speaks to the respect that the committee now has for what St. Mary's has been able to do, not only this season, but also over the course of the last couple of years. This is a five seed who has done their job each of the last couple of years and beat the 12 seed in front of them. Now they have not gotten by that stage yet. They still have lost each of the last 2 years in that round of 32 to the four seed. So there is still that to kind of pay attention to, look at, and for St. Mary's to overcome. But on the surface, looking at what St. Mary's has in front of them, I think this is good. I think that they've landed in a really good spot. Grand Canyon will not be an easy matchup, but they get by that game. Alabama Charleston is doable. These are opponents that are going to be a little bit more closer to what you would expect from a 4-13 seeded game. Like UConn was way underseeded for what they were a year ago. UCLA was underseeded for what they were 2 years ago. It feels like that St. Mary's finally kind of caught a break to an extent. I think this is probably the best 12 of the 12 seeds that they will have seen in the last 3 years. But if they are able to get by that, the 4-13 matchup, I think, favors them more than it has in the last couple of years. For Gonzaga, they're going to be taking on McNeese State, the 5-12 game in Salt Lake City. That's going to be on Thursday, 4:25 Pacific time on TBS. The winner of that game will get the winner of Kansas and Samford. And this is an interesting draw as well. So Gonzaga is in the Midwest region. So if they do advance to the Sweet 16, they will be heading off to Detroit. And this McNeese State team is a very good team. It's going to be a fascinating watch to kind of see how Gonzaga is able to kind of counteract the speed and the different looks that they're going to be able to give them. Yes, they're in the Southland Conference. They won 30 games. They were 17-1 in for their regular season and tournament championship. This is a team that, even though soft conference and everything, all that goes with that, they have wins on the road at VCU. They won at UAB. They won at Michigan. And yes, I know Michigan was not the same Michigan as we've seen in years past, but that's good. But these are still good road wins. You can't discount what teams are able to do on the road. And McNeese State has done well playing away from their home gym. They're going to be heading off all the way out to Salt Lake City into a hostile environment because we know the Zags travel well. And immediately surface level looking at this, this feels like a good matchup for the Zags because McNeese State is a little on the smaller side. They do shoot to three well, which is going to be something that Gonzaga is going to have to deal with. And Gonzaga does not necessarily shoot to three well, but the Zags are bigger than this team. And Gonzaga, especially after this past week, it's like really kind of like they were minus 17 in the rebounding column. So you know what they're going to be paying attention to going into this one. So fascinating, fascinating game as you start to think about what Gonzaga is going to be able to do and be able to accomplish in the NCAA tournament. And for both of these squads, for Samers and Gonzaga, I do feel like the committee, I think, did well for these two squads. Gonzaga, I think, is positioned well because that Kansas team potentially in the second round is not the same Kansas team that we've seen in years past. They really struggled in Big 12 play this year. Samford is another 13 seed that a lot of people kind of like. And I think that says more about, and I think that says one, a lot about Samford, but also says a lot about where Kansas is at this point. This isn't like your one or two seed Kansas. The fact that they're four seed, I mean, they kind of get credit for the conference that they play in as opposed to maybe what their results say they should be. And obviously Gonzaga has experience playing Kansas. It was a few, they did see them in the Maui. They didn't play them in the Maui, but they were still in that tournament and they saw Kansas a couple of years ago. So this is a team that they are familiar with. They're familiar with Bill Self. They know the coaching style. And being in Salt Lake, being closer to home, I know Gonzaga wanted to be in Spokane. They wanted to be able to host for that weekend tournament. And I know they're bitter that St. Mary's of all teams is actually going to be the five seed up there and not them. So it's going to, but this is still a good matchup. I think this is still good. This ended up being a really good landing spot. Obviously, they were very happy they'd end up being a five seed, not a six or a seven. They're happy that it's out west. They're happy that the window for them also, I think, plays well. Yes, Purdue is the one seed in the Midwest region, and that does kind of throw up a little bit of red flags when you start to look further down the road for Gonzaga. But it's also it's a different Gonzaga team that even saw Purdue back in November. I would say this is a much better Gonzaga team, much better version of this Gonzaga team than we saw just 4 months ago, 5 months ago at the beginning of the season. So yes, they're in that region with Purdue, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they can't actually overcome that team this time around. At least like for both of these squads, I don't know, like for those of you who haven't actually seen a bracket or anything else, good thing at least that they're not in the East, because dear God, like that is just turned into a murderer's row. And I think, UConn just got screwed, in that bracket. I'm pulling it back up now because wow, like the committee did them absolutely no favors. You have UConn as the one. You have Florida Atlantic in there as the eight. You have San Diego State in there. You have BYU in there. You have Illinois. You have Washington State. You have Iowa State. You have, let's see, who else was there? What is wild about that region is that you have the Big 12 champion, the Big East champion, the Big 10 champion. You have the SEC champion. You have four of the big leagues with their conference champion in that region, which is just wild. And three of the four teams that were in the Final Four a year ago. So that is going, if you're Gonzaga, if you're St. Mary's, you're just really happy that you are not stuck in that region and having to deal with that. One of those pods is going to be playing in Spokane alongside St. Mary's. It's San Diego State, UAB, that's the 5-12 matchup. The other 5-12 matchup in Spokane. Auburn and Yale 4:13. And those two on Friday are the early contests at Spokane Arena. And then on and then for Gonzaga, who's also, let's see, I'm going to take a look who else is in Salt Lake with them. Salt Lake. The other two, Arizona and Long Beach State. You have a matchup of two former Gonzaga coaches there. Tommy Lloyd and Dan Monson will be matched up in that. And that one, obviously, the Dan Monson situation is very unique, and it is just the kind of a huge thing of its own. For those who haven't followed that one, Dan Monson, Long Beach State had announced on last Monday, not of this week, but of the previous week, that he was going to be relieved of his duties at the end of the season. And then he went out and won the Big West tournament. He is now in the NCAA tournament. So he gets to hold on to his job at least for a few more days before he has to head on home, pack up his office, and go. But, I mean, that is just wild. It just kind of speaks. I mean, we saw similar things with Pepperdine in the WCC tournament where Lorenzo Romar was allowed to finish out the rest of the conference tournament with the team before they let him go. And the other one in Salt Lake, which this one I feel is just a travesty of seeding line. Dayton is the 7, which I think is about maybe a little low, but maybe about right for them. But the travesty is the 10 seed that they have to play, and that's Nevada. Nevada was played much better, and metrically wise, I'm not sure how they ended up a 10 seed. But for the game that it will be, that's going to be a great, great contest between Dayton and Nevada. I could very easily see that being a 10-7 upset there, Nevada taking that one. Haven't filled out my bracket yet, still got to do that. So as I'm just starting to kind of like look through all the potential matchups and everything else, that's one where I would definitely circle, and that's going to be in Salt Lake City as part of the opposite pod of Gonzaga and McNeese. And these aren't the only two WCC teams that are in action as part of the postseason. USF did get an invite to the NIT. They will play on Wednesday at Cincinnati. USF enters the tournament as what looks like a 7 seed. I don't think they technically mark it as a 7 seed, but they're taking on the 2 seed Cincinnati. So that will be a really interesting matchup. And I'll get into that after we talk with Theo Lawson. So we'll bring him on in. We'll talk about the Gonzaga matchup against McNeese, what his initial impressions of the seed line, everything that kind of surrounded that, what the Zags are looking like after post WCC tournament, and really some of like everything that's kind of surrounding what's going on in the next few days. All right, I'm happy to bring in Theo Lawson. He covers the Zags for the Spokesman Review. Theo, you and I were in, we got to hang out and chat a little bit in Vegas and do all of that. We've gotten about a week from the WCC tourney. We have our selections. The Zags are heading to Salt Lake City as a 5 seed. When you saw the bracket come out, what was your initial impression of their initial matchup, and then the draw that they pulled?
Yeah, well, we heard the pairings announced from the media room at McCarthy Athletic Center at the Kennel, and Gonzaga players, coaches were watching from a nearby club room. We didn't get to watch with them, but we could hear the reaction when you see number 5 Gonzaga, and I think everyone in the building, including the media members, the players, coaches, were probably shocked to see that number 5 seed next to Gonzaga's name. And then obviously you see the number 12 McNeese State. So I think it really was kind of best case scenario for Gonzaga. This is as well as they could have done, considering how they closed the season with that loss to St. Mary's in the conference title game. Most brackets projected Gonzaga as a number 6 or a number 7 seed. You know, the average seed, according to Bracket Matrix, was a 6.98, so actually closer to a 7. I saw more projected 8 seeds than 5 seeds. So number 5 was really surprising, but obviously getting a chance to play in Salt Lake City. I believe the Zags have played 11 tournament games in Salt Lake City, which is more than most programs have played tournament games at all. So they're very, very familiar with playing games in Salt Lake City, and then obviously have more fans and kind of in that region of the country than some of the other sites. So really, really good opportunity for Gonzaga. And then, you know, as the night kind of went on, I think we learned a little bit more as to why Gonzaga might have got that 5 seed with BYU being unable to kind of grab the 5 seed because they can't play on Sundays. They wouldn't have had to play Sunday this round, as I understand. But had they moved on after Saturday, they would have had to be kind of funneled into a Friday Sunday schedule next week. So you know, it's just a case of an old conference rival helping the Zags out once again. And I hope that Gonzaga sends BYU some flowers here today.
Right, or just bring them to Salt Lake, have someone drive over to Provo and drop them off. Because I mean, yeah, it was a huge kind of like footnote as like the bracket was rolling out and seeing all of that. But Gonzaga does end up having the short trip. They don't have to go all that far. They go to Salt Lake, and they will play a McNeese team that was 30-3 this year, 17-1 in the Southland. This is a good team. And I think like a lot of, like we saw those who watched a lot of the conference conference tournaments got to kind of see what this team is about. In just the brief kind of probably like lead up to this and the 24 hours, less than 24 hours since it was announced. What's your initial impression of this McNeese team and what challenges they may provide to the Zags? Because this looks like at least a pretty good defensive team that they're going to see.
Yeah. McNeese is, I believe, one of 4 teams in the country that won 30 games this year. And the other 3 are James Madison, Houston, and UConn. So winning 30 games, I don't care what your schedule looks like. It's really hard to do. That's something that the Zags have been able to do it, kind of during their best seasons. But certainly they can't take that for granted because they've had a lot of seasons where they can't win 32. So I think there's probably a lot of respect for what McNeese has done. You look at their schedule and they really haven't played a murderer's row of non-conference opponents. You know, their only Power 6 opponent was Michigan, and Michigan wasn't much of a Power 6 opponent this year. Obviously, but had a good win against Michigan. I guess you still have to go into a Big Ten atmosphere and win that game. They actually opened the season with a win at VCU, which is a tournament team. So they've had a few impressive wins. The Southland Conference doesn't have a lot in terms of strength of schedule. I believe they're kind of the only top 175 team in the net from that conference. So they haven't played a ton of really good team. So that's kind of the thing that interests me about this matchup is they're going to be playing a top, top 30 net team, top 20 net team for the first time this year in Gonzaga. And I'm just kind of looking at their roster. It looks like they kind of play kind of a 5-out style, similar to what Gonzaga sees a lot in the WCC with teams like Pacific and Portland, and teams that don't really have a dominant big man like St. Mary's and Gonzaga do. So I think it'll be interesting to see what McNeese does to try to stop Graham Ike against some of those smaller teams. He really was able to go to work and dominate in the low post, and hasn't had as much success against the likes of St. Mary's and Purdue, UConn, the teams that really had a good defensive 5-man. So we'll kind of see what that matchup looks like down low. They obviously have a few great scorers. Shahada Wells is kind of the guy that sticks out, and he was actually playing for the TCU team last year that lost to Gonzaga in the second round of the tournament. I believe he only played 5 minutes in that game. I think only had 1 shot attempt, so he wasn't really a rotational guy for that team that lost to Gonzaga in Denver. But he's obviously taken a step, and he's someone who's capable of going off for 25, 30 points. And so it'll be an interesting matchup. Obviously, it's a matchup that a lot of the analysts have already kind of picked as a trendy upset. I believe Seth Davis and Clark Kellogg, both on the selection show, picked that upset yesterday after it was announced. And Gonzaga players definitely saw that. So it's another kind of chip on their shoulder. They've had a lot of things like that this year between kind of being picked second in the conference and being left off of the all conference award. So that didn't seem to help them when it came to playing St. Mary's in the WCC title game. But we'll see if it kind of can kind of add fuel to the fire before this tournament matchup.
Yeah, and it's like Yeah, I saw that. A lot of trend. Obviously, everyone looking for that 12-5 upset, who it's going to be. And I mean, hell, at this point in the tournament, he started looking just like, which of the 14s are actually going to pull the upset? Which of the 13s are going to pull the upset? I mean, we're still not that far away from, we're only 2 years. I think it's 2 years removed from St. Peter's making their run. And they're back in the tournament. So I think, everybody's staring at them, although I think they ended up, maybe the worst possible matchup they could end up with. But this is one of those times, obviously, everyone's trying to figure out who's going to upset who and everything else. But looking at this Midwest region, looking at the where Gonzaga got dropped, there's some big name teams. Obviously, they have Purdue on their side, the one seed on their side of the bracket, which is a game that they played earlier in the year. But this Gonzaga team is a different team than the one that Purdue played early on. As you just kind of took a brief look and an initial look at the rest of the region, what's kind of your feeling on how far this Zags team could get based on just the region?
I really think they have to kind of like their little pod so far, at least with those four teams. Obviously, McNeese State, they won 30 games, but obviously that's a game that you feel like Gonzaga should still win despite the upset picks and everything like that. So you feel pretty good about their chances. I believe they're a 6-point favorite in that game in Salt Lake City. And then actually, I really kind of like their opportunity in the next game, Kansas versus Samford. Most would assume Kansas moves on, but this is a very kind of different Kansas team than the one that opened the year, than the one that the Zags, I guess didn't play at the Maui Invitational, but saw they were part of that stacked field in Honolulu. So a Kansas team that that's been playing without Hunter Dickinson and Kevin McCullough. McCullough was actually considering the Zags out of the transfer portal a couple of years ago, so that'll be an interesting matchup if they play the Zags in the second round. But obviously, Kansas has to make it past the first round, and you're not sure what the status of Dickinson and McCullough look like, and that's not a very deep Kansas team to begin with. The Zags are kind of similar, honestly. They have a few guys off the bench, but no one really stands out too much. But I really kind of like their little pod, so I think there's a decent chance that they can continue this run to the Sweet 16. I think it would be eight straight if they make it to the second weekend this year. So obviously you eventually have to play Purdue probably if they can win and avoid losing a first round game this year. But Purdue is a team that Gonzaga hung with for a lot of that game in the Maui Invitational. They were leading Purdue by 5 points at halftime. I'm not sure anyone in the country is slowing down Zach Edey, but if you can kind of contain the other players on that team, Braden Smith, their point guard had an injury in the Big Ten tournament, so obviously they just lost to Wisconsin. So anyone's beatable. I would say the one team that Gonzaga really doesn't want to run into is UConn, and that's probably going to be my pick to win the national title. But so far I kind of like what they have in front of them. Obviously, every game is going to be tough in the tournament, but this is probably as good as you could have hoped for in terms of a first round game, their pod, and kind of making it to that second weekend. And then, after that, you just have to play good basketball no matter what.
And playing good basketball. I mean, the Zags have been playing good basketball, obviously, more or less since probably the same the loss against St. Mary's in Spokane just about almost a month and a half ago now. And they did pick up the loss to St. Mary's, obviously, just earlier this week on Tuesday. But they've been on such a roll. Like, how much is there? Are they going to take from that St. Mary's game to try to make adjustments? Because they're not going to see a team like St. Mary's really for a while if they see one like them at all the rest of the way. So what can they really take from that? Or is it kind of just like you look at some small things and just look to kind of tighten some things up? Because, I mean, Graham Ike wasn't really available in that one because he was in foul trouble. You had some other guys just had some off shooting nights. So what's kind of been the chatter, or what has been the team worked on in the last week? If there's anything really different from what we saw on Tuesday.
Yeah, the one thing that they talked about yesterday when we interviewed them after the pairings were announced were the what was the rebounding differential against St. Mary's. And so I think St. Mary's was at least plus 15, maybe plus 19, something in that range. And I went back to look at kind of the last time they had been out rebounded that badly, and actually it was last year against San Francisco, funny enough. But I think there's only been three occasions in the last 8-9 years where they've been plus or minus 15 or worse on the glass, and that's kind of a point of pride in this Gonzaga program is they always rebound really well. So that's something that they took personal, and I think especially against a McNeese team that plays, I believe their biggest player is going to be 6'9". They play like a lot of kind of 6'8", 6'6". Their guards are 6'6", 6'3". So it should be a game where you feel like their three big lineup that Gonzaga plays with EK, Watson, Ben Gregg should be able to kind of control the glass. And that's definitely something that they don't want to lose moving forward. So that I think that's going to be kind of the main thing that they have to do. And obviously we've been talking about Gonzaga's 3-point shooting since early November. And that obviously kind of stubbed them in the toe against St. Mary's. I think maybe 2 of 11 or something along those lines in that game. So you can't expect to win big games at this point of the year if you're not making at least 30% of your threes. Obviously Graham Mikay is gonna have a lot to say as far as what the Zags do offensively, and if he can kind of control the paint, I'm not sure the 3-point shooting will matter a whole lot, but you want to give yourselves a chance to shoot 30% or better and kind of straighten that out. And Gonzaga had done a better job of shooting the three since kind of the early season struggles. Ryan Nemhard was really struggling from distance early on, and Nolan Hickman kind of became one of the conference's top 3-point shooting weapons late in the year. So if those two can kind of get back on track, and Gonzaga can make threes, dominate the post, rebound, I think they'll be in decent shape.
Yeah, because I mean, it does feel like that this is a pod, as you mentioned earlier, that does on paper look like it's a pretty good one for the Zags to be able to potentially get out of before they get to maybe deeper and you start to see Purdue. And yeah, I kind of agree with you, as even on like the UConn front, I think both WCC programs are glad they don't have to see them at all, at least until a Final Four appearance. And I'll touch a little bit on the other WCC team. St. Mary's is heading up to Spokane and going to be playing in Spokane Arena, just kind of like the little almost irony or poeticism that the Gales will be heading up to Spokane and the Zags won't be there. Seeing it, and they're going to see a team that Gonzaga saw last year in the tournament in Grand Canyon. Any sort of like, a scouting report on Grand Canyon? Obviously they have some different pieces, but there's still some critical piece on that squad that the Zags had to deal with a year ago.
Yeah. I off the top of my head, I can't really think too much about Grand Canyon's roster. I know they lost a few seniors from that team, but it's going to be a team that that's going to be well coached. Obviously Bryce Drew has done a great job there with Grand Canyon. I think I saw that he's made the tournament 3 of 4 years, if I'm not mistaken, and that's always tough to do in a mid-major conference like the WAC. I'm very familiar with the WAC. I went to school in Idaho, and Idaho was playing in the WAC back then, so I'm pretty familiar with that conference. And it's not it's not the best conference in the country, but it's not easy to get out of that league three or four years and make the tournament. So it's going to be a well-coached team. And one thing that I do remember from that game last year was Grand Canyon student section. They had probably three times as many students as Gonzaga had, and their fans are kind of known for bringing energy, being loud, showing up in numbers. So I imagine Grand Canyon's going to have a ton of fans in Spokane, and there's going to be a ton of Gonzaga fans who are not going to be rooting for the Gales. Although Mark did say yesterday he's hoping that Gonzaga fans root for St. Mary's, you know, cheer on their WCC brethren up there in Spokane. I don't think that's going to happen. When we talked to the Gonzaga players about St. Mary's playing up here, they said they hope that the Gonzaga fans wear purple, you know, root against St. Mary's. So different messaging from the Gonzaga players and Mark Few, but nonetheless, it's a good opportunity for St. Mary's. And, I certainly don't envy Grand Canyon having to play against that St. Mary's team. They're pretty hungry and obviously a deserved WCC champion. And there's not too many teams in the country that play that fundamentally sound on defense. So it's going to be a tough matchup for anyone who sees St. Mary's in the tournament.
So I guess like as I wrap this up, so just a couple of notes, is there a go-to place you've had to make actually quite a few trips over the years to Salt Lake? You are living in Spokane. What are some go-to spots that you would say is maybe one in Salt Lake and then maybe one in Spokane that people should check out?
Yeah, well, actually the main reason I wanted Gonzaga to play in Salt Lake City was was for the Red Iguana. It's a Mexican restaurant, especially known for their mole sauce. I've been traveling to Salt Lake City since 2017, since I covered Washington State football in the Pac-12. And, you know, for some reason, I ended up going to games at Utah 3 or 4 years in a row. I don't know how the schedule worked out that way, but every time I went to Salt Lake, I went to the Red Iguana, and then obviously moving to the Gonzaga beat, had a chance to go there the last couple of years with the BYU trip, and was very disappointed when BYU left the conference because I wouldn't get my annual trip to the Red Iguana. So I know Gonzaga's sports information director was already looking at reservations for Red Iguana yesterday. So it's something that that everyone in the program and kind of around here that travels to Salt Lake knows about. And we've seen Mark Few there. We've seen, you know, Adam Morrison there. So it's a popular spot, and we'll be there at least once or twice probably this week. As far as Spokane, a lot of great places to eat. I could probably give you 100 spots to go, but I'm trying to think of any spots that come to mind immediately. But one of the popular Gonzaga spots is Jack and Dan's, which is the bar kind of near campus that I believe is actually owned by John Stockton's family. I think that's right. Maybe don't quote me on that, but that's a popular spot for Gonzaga fans to kind of pregame. But downtown there's a number of good restaurants. So you can't really go wrong. A number of good breakfast spots. Frank's Diner is kind of a legendary spot around here. It's in a little train where they serve breakfast, and a number of good places to eat. David's Pizza is right across the street from Spokane Arena. That's a popular spot. So a number of good spots, and I'll send you some recommendations here later this week if I can remember.
Sounds good. But the Zags and the Gales are back in the NCAA tournament. Both are 5 seeds. The Zags heading to Salt Lake City. The Gales heading to Spokane. So it's going to be a exciting week. March Madness is here. Thanks, Theo, for hopping on. Good chatting with you as always, and we will definitely catch up down the road.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, and enjoy Spokane this week.
All right, I do want to thank Theo for hopping on. It's great to chat with him. We got to really connect more in Las Vegas just last week, and he'll be heading to Salt Lake City with the Zags, and I'll be heading up to Spokane this week. So we'll be kind of like not quite training places, but like, yeah, I'll be heading up there for the first time. So this will be a fun trip to be up in Spokane and be able to see the Gales up there, where they have already won once this year. So looking forward to the game that's going to happen first, which is USF. USF will play before Gonzaga, will play before St. Mary's. They will be taking on Cincinnati in the first round of the NIT. It will be at Cincinnati. That will be Wednesday at 6 p.m. on ESPN+. And just a quick kind of like rundown of all these teams, like Cincinnati, 20-14 on the year. They were 11-12 in the Big 12. First season for Cincinnati in the Big 12. They ended up losing to Baylor in the Big 12 quarterfinals. But this is a solid Cincinnati team. And one of the things you kind of always know about these Cincinnati squads, it's like there's a grittiness many times to these squads. And you can very much tell just by the way that the metrics start to show them. On KenPom, they were adjusted defense 17th, ranked 17th in the nation. This is a team that is 13th in rebounding margin at plus 7 per game. They are 12th in offensive rebounds. They've only been out rebounded 6 times this season. Although they're not terribly good from the 3-point line, 32% on the season. As I'm starting to like read off some of those stats and just how they are rebounding wise defensively, sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it? It sounds a little St. Mary's ish. And this is the one thing, and thinking about those rebounding numbers, how good of a rebounding team Cincinnati is. This is a critical part for USF. As I was going through just some of the numbers of how well USF has done on that point. Because they have been out-rebounded 13 times this season. And in those 13 games, they are 4-9 in those contests. In any other game in which they either are equal in rebounds or are plus in the rebounding column. The Dons are 19-1, which obviously it's not just about that one number, but it is a eye-popping difference between when they rebound well and when they do not. When they are out-rebounded 4-9, when they are either equal or out-rebound their opponent 19-1. Cincinnati is going to use their depth to their advantage, or try to use their depth to their advantage. 10 players who average 10 or more minutes a game. Their leading scorer, Dan Skillings Jr., 6'6 guard. He hasn't started most of the year, but he started 8 of the last 9 games. His season high was 29 against Stetson, who is making their first NCAA tournament appearance this year. He had 25 against Kansas in the Big 12 tournament in their win against Kansas. 12 points per game, 6 rebounds. So you're not going to get it from one run source. So you're going to get it from a lot of different spots on the Cincinnati roster. And they also have some size. So USF is going to have to deal with the length and the height and the weight of this squad. 7-footer Aziz Bandaogo, and then also the 6'11 Victor Lakim are two guys that the Dons are going to have to really kind of figure out how you're going to match up with them. They're not going to be on the floor at the same time. You're not going to see that much. But like Santa Clara, like St. Mary's, like Gonzaga, they have legit size. Like LMU, legit size. And USF is a little on the smaller side, a little on the slighter side. Jonathan Mobo obviously being kind of like the center for them, 6'9". So they're going to need to find a way to kind of combat the size, the rebounding prowess of the Cincinnati team. And if the Dons are to win, they will either play on Saturday or Sunday. Because they are the lower seed, more than likely they will still be on the road. And we'll just have to kind of wait and see what that matchup is going to look like if they're able to advance. So another note, something that also happened this week that is not St. Mary's, not Gonzaga, not USF related, was there is some Lorenzo Romar news. And I thought this was incredibly fascinating and just what could the potential here be. So Lorenzo Romar does have a new job. He is not leaving the West Coast. He's not leaving Southern California. In fact, he's not even leaving the WCC. He is heading to LMU as an assistant to Stan Johnson. And I have said this, a number of people have said this. It started to be a little bit of the buzz on Twitter as the news came out, that this might be one of the more perfect landing spots for him, because many of us have said and acknowledged how great of a recruiter Romar has been over the years, whether that be at Washington, at Pepperdine. He has been able to do it wherever he has gone. The biggest critique has been the on the floor results. The fact that Washington maybe underperformed what was expected of them for many, many years. That Pepperdine underperformed for the talent that they had for many, many years. And this might be the good combination of, you have the recruiter, now you have, and now with a head coach who has been able, I feel in many respects, been able to get more out of his guys than maybe what the talent says that he has. And I think this going into the next year, that combination of Stan Johnson and Lorenzo Romar there in LA, I think is going to be fascinating. I would pay a lot of attention to the transfer portal. I would pay a lot of attention to who LMU was able to bring in, because there is a more than good chance that LMU is going to be bringing in some dudes, and they're going, health being the key factor, that they're going to make an impact in the WCC next year. We already can kind of mark out Gonzaga, St. Mary's are going to be there. USF is not going to go away. Santa Clara is not going to necessarily go away. Washington State coming in is going to be another addition to that group at the top of the conference. Can LMU also join that group? If they get healthy with that combination of recruiting and coaching, I very well think they could be back in that mix with everybody else. Again, LMU finished fourth in the WCC a year ago with Cam Shelton, with a slew of guys who, when healthy, showed that they could be one of the better teams in the WCC. So this week is going to be a little bit nutty. So there will be a podcast, there'll be an episode essentially every day this week. We're going to try to roll them out one after the other. As we get closer to the games, we're going to try to do a little bit, maybe a couple of lives. We're going to try to get a little different interviews here and there. So keep an eye out for that. This is going to be a fun week. It is tournament week. The real madness starts on Thursday. Gonzaga will be taking on McNeese, the 12 seed McNeese, at 4:25 Pacific in Salt Lake City on TBS. St. Mary's will have the nightcap on Friday in Spokane, 7:05 Pacific time start on True TV. All right. Well, that'll do it for this episode of the unofficial WCC Hoops podcast. Be sure to hit that subscribe button. Follow on social media at Post by Zach. Also for the podcast specific at Unoff WCC Pod. Thanks for hanging out, everybody. It's going to be a crazy week. Go Gales. Zags, good luck to them in the NCAA tournament as well. And I will catch you later.